one of the to-dos are checked off, it upgrades the progress on a percentage basis. So, you know, it may go from 50 to 63%. And so that way you can really gauge your pipeline, see what you have going on, see where your time delays are, see who, which one of your employees isn't doing what they need to be doing. It's just, it provides so much. And it, the great thing is it's technology. So it's always improving. And it's, we have a motto that the answer should never be, well, I just have to work harder. You know, we have a 2X tech. If we hear a problem twice, let's solve it with technology.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Rick Allen is a husband and father, and he's always been an entrepreneur. He loves to positively impact people's lives and disrupt markets. Rick's current projects both revolve around the distressed debt market and disrupting how mortgage notes are traded. His company, PaperStack, is the first fully digital online process for buying and selling mortgage notes. As a co-founder also at MWM Fund, Rick and his team focus on deploying capital in the distressed debt space with the goal of managing for economic returns and social impact. In short, they are saving people's homes and giving back to the American dream of home ownership. Rick, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam, man. I really appreciate it. Been looking forward to this one for a while. So thanks for having me.
Hey, the pleasure's mine. Absolutely mine. You know, I ask the same question to everybody who comes on. Can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Sure. So started in buying distressed real estate, worked for a company that was sourcing inventory and then originating hard money for investors. This was back in the heyday, 2005, 6, 7. And in 2008, the market started to tank. And so I thought it'd be a good idea to go out and start my own investment company, buying and selling real estate. Not the best time to start a real estate investment company, but we were fortunate. We had a good team around us. And my partners and I, we ended up flipping about 400 houses between 2008 to the end of 2011. At that point, one partner and I decided to liquidate our shares to the other third remaining partner. And we were going to go have a lifestyle business. I was going to raise my kids. I was going to play some golf, really just enjoy life, you know, do some fix and flips, build a rental portfolio. And that lasted for about 3 months. I ended up buying a mortgage note kind of by accident. How I got into it, it was $90,000 of debt on a frame duplex, and I paid $8,400 for it, and ended up getting the house back and sold the property for $38,000 and did everything in about 14 days. I didn't put not a coat of paint on the wall or anything, just took it back and resold it. And that kind of set sail for my note journey. Along the way, you know, there was a broken process we saw with how you buy and sell debt. There was nothing structured like real estate. There was no closing company. There weren't standard contracts. I was supposed to send money to the seller before they actually gave me the collateral package. So we decided we wanted to fix that and created what is now PaperStack. It's an online trading platform for mortgage debt. It's an automated, you know, process. It guides you from step one to step to the last step, you know, cradle to grave when you're buying assets. And we were so good at buying and selling debt that we decided to do a structured fund. We'd been working with friends and family money. So we went the full route of going to the SEC and getting a Regulation A+ fund approved, or it's not called approved. I can't say that. I'll get in trouble. Qualified. It's qualified by the SEC. So we launched that in 2018. So that's been a journey, man. It's been a, I feel like everything just kind of layered on top of itself to get us to where we are today.
Wow. That's fantastic. Let's rewind this a little bit on the PaperStack side of things. Can you break down, I mean, is PaperStack a DIY place for people to come and sell their notes, or what is it?
It's a great way to look at it. It is a DIY place for people to buy and sell notes. We have a marketplace. It's open to anybody. We don't charge you to become a member of PaperStack. We make a transaction fee when something closes. So, you know, we're able to give people an online marketplace, but really the secret sauce is what happens once you, we call it a transaction. Once you enter in and agree to buy something, you know, the platform itself handles everything from the negotiations. It allows you to negotiate right on the platform. It generates all the documents for you. You can store vesting profile or how you want to take title to it. You can do everything from communicate right there through email or through the transaction messaging system. You can even make a phone call on the platform. You know, it'll join you into a conference call, records it. It transcribes your conversation and it puts it right on your timeline. So you have everything for a single deal is in a siloed environment. You know, you don't have to go scouring through past text messages or emails or trying to recall phone calls. So everything happens right there on the platform.
That's awesome. I mean, that's a brilliant model. How did you build it out? I know starting, you know, in and building a tech platform is no small undertaking. So what were your keys to getting that done?
Well, I think there's this sort of, you know, notch in the belt loop or bedpost, whatever you want to call it, for anybody who gets into tech. You kind of start with, I'm going to outsource my development overseas. And that's what we did. We outsourced development, my partner TJ and I. And I think we vaporized about $30,000 on outsourcing. And when we were just, you know, we weren't getting great communication from the people we were outsourcing to. And I'm not a technical founder, so I don't know anything about code. I'm pretty proficient at Excel and email. So I brought in a couple of guys, you know, somebody I knew from college and somebody I'd known for, you know, 12 years at the time, who I worked on another project, who was a developer. And I had him look at what we got back. And he said, look, this is, he called it spaghetti code, which I assumed wasn't a good thing.
Right.
And I go, well, can you fix it? And he said, no, you need to start from scratch. So TJ and I, who had founded the company, brought him in. His name's Mike. He's our fourth co-founder. And we picked up Brett, who's a kind of the marketing genius. He's a professor part-time, teaches product launch, branding, SEO. So he's, you know, not only teaching it, but he does it and he's in the trenches on a daily basis. So we've got a pretty strong team and we just started redeveloping from the ground up. You know, we launched a beta version and received great feedback on the beta version. And then we said, you know what? Let's rewrite the whole code system again. And we rewrote it to what was at the time, you know, this was in 2018, was like brand new cutting edge technology, like 3 months released, something called Firebase. We could nerd out on that if you ever wanted to, but it's just some pretty technical stuff. So it's a very technologically advanced platform.
Right, right. How did you guys get, I mean, it's one thing to build the platform, but then how did you market it and actually bring in people that want to use it?
So I had been in the market or been in the, you know, in the space for a while, buying and selling debt. And so we, you know, we always attended conferences and, you know, we had a group out of Texas, Note School, is where we sort of, once we'd been buying and selling debt, went to them for some education, you know, mentorship type of deal, which they really turbocharged our investment strategies. But they always put on a big event. So it was a lot of attending events and networking with people. And then, of course, you know, Brett being the marketing guy, he has our pay-per-click stuff pretty dialed in. So podcast was another one. We were jumped on. We did a circuit of like 11 podcasts when we launched, which are always great. So, you know, it's a huge way to put in a little time and touch a lot of people.
Is it, I know you mentioned, or we talked earlier about this being a DIY platform, if you will, but can the technology you have be institutionalized?
Great question. We're doing a funding round right now to raise some capital to build out an enterprise product for institutions. Believe it or not, they're still trading a lot. A lot of people are still trading, which is buying and selling, not to get too jargony, but you know, $100 million pools of debt through email and spreadsheets.
Right.
So it's crazy. We were approached by a broker dealer. They did about $20 billion last year in paper, and they're on pace to do $30 billion this year. And this was like right at the end of 19. They said, hey, we're going to think about building our own platform. But in the same day, two different people said, you should check out PaperStack first. And they took a look at it and they loved it because they say, look, you guys have a fresh look on it. You know, traditionally buying and selling mortgage debt was kind of a, you know, an old boys club, you know, predominantly older, you know, I say older, I'm getting older now, but, you know, gentlemen who were 50s, 60s buying and selling and trading the debt. So technology was not the forefront. We've got a pretty good advantage because we're actively in the market buying and selling, but also we have a technical founder in-house. So, you know, he's now as adept at buying and selling debt just from seeing it happen that he can develop and really think outside, you know, the phrase we use, there is no box. You don't even think outside the box. You just let your mind run wild and see where it goes. So yeah, long answer to yes, it can be institutionalized. We're mapping that out right now on what that development's going to look like.
And that's fantastic. Yeah. Cause you know, I'm not in your industry, but it, from what I've heard, as you said, it's emails, it's phone calls. It's, you know, it's pretty archaic really in its own right. And I would think that the larger buyers and sellers could, you know, garner a premium for what it is they're buying and selling with the transparency you guys can provide.
For sure. I think the biggest thing they need right now is going to be, they need an efficiency tool, something that they can do transaction management with. I've done some institutional trades and I was shocked at how I was sending the same document four times, or things are getting buried in email. And I go, man, you guys need PaperStack. Like it makes everything in a siloed environment. And then if you're the guy who's in the C-suite, maybe you're CEO, COO, something like that, it's got this reporting dashboard that you can see everything along the way. It's self-reporting. So as one of the to-dos are checked off, it upgrades the progress on a percentage basis. So, you know, it may go from 50 to 63%. And so that way you can really gauge your pipeline, see what you have going on, see where your time delays are, see which one of your employees isn't doing what they need to be doing. It's just, it provides so much. And the great thing is it's technology. So it's always improving. And we have a motto that the answer should never be, well, I just have to work harder. You know, we have a 2X tech. If we hear a problem twice, let's solve it with technology.
Let's talk a little bit about your MWM fund.
Right.
What is that about? And I mean, that sounds, while you're buying debt, it's also, you know, a completely different and very hands-on business, I would assume.
It is a very hands-on business. And we have, one of our founders, TJ, or Terrence Osterman, he's kind of been spearheading that. My role in that is minimized, other than looking at reports and obviously having a sister company, PaperStack, to help them sell debt is obviously there. But the fund itself, it's MWM Fund, which is Money with Meaning Fund. We got into this business of buying and selling debt as a way to get houses, to take houses back, to foreclose. And after we had some education, we looked at it and said, well, let's try to modify people's loans or give them a short payoff or really work with the borrowers and look at every other option other than foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Let's explore all those options first. And we did one deal and just had people crying on the phone because we were able to save their house and none of the banks would work with them. They treated them like dirt. And we said, wow, that was great. We made good profit. But more than that, we helped somebody out. And it was a good feeling. Like it was like, man, I'm depositing some money into the bank, but I'm also depositing stuff into the karma bank or the feel goods, you know? So from there, we're like, well, let's do that again. And so we started doing that and we go, wow, this is great. You know, let's open up a fund and let's manage with like a double bottom line for profit and purpose. And so that's what the fund does, is we try to save people's homes.
Right. Yeah. Cause you guys are, if I'm hearing, reading between the lines here, you guys are buying at a discount and then able to pass on some of that discount to the borrower, renegotiate terms with them, rewrite the terms of their loan.
Exactly.
And then it's a win-win because now you've created your own upside in the deal and they have, you know, been able to reduce their payments to where they can, it's something they can manage and continue to do.
That's exactly right. You might buy something, I'll just throw the numbers out there, at 50 cents on the dollar, you know, you can restructure their loan, let them pay for 6 months. They're happy. They get to keep your house and then you can turn around and sell it for 85 to 90 cents on the dollar after you've collected months of payments and stuff like that. So it's kind of a win-win situation for everybody. And being as, you know, a smaller fund, you know, and not having, you know, 25,000 assets, you can be a little bit more nimble and, you know, work with people. Ask them this. The question we love to ask is, you know, tell me what happened. Why did you fall behind? And do you want to keep your house? And just let them talk and you'll hear some incredible stories.
Right, right. No, that's fantastic. And I would think, correct me on this, but I mean, the distressed debt inventory, is it lower now? Is it higher now? What's that market even look like today?
Oh, it's definitely been dwindling up until 2020. But now there's this sort of untalked about backlog of, hey, man, there was people who weren't making their mortgage payments. And so, you know, you're starting to see some of that stuff move through the pipeline. You know, right now, Q4 is such a hot time for buying and selling because sellers are rebalancing their books, end of the year, rebalance. Gotta, you know, if they're a buyer and they've got, you know, dry powder, they got capital to spend, they need to place it before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Sellers need to rebalance their books. And so you sort of have this perfect storm of increased trading. And, you know, real estate has their summer buying months or the spring buying season of maybe April, May through August, Well, the debt side, I see huge spikes in trading Q4. So we're kind of gearing up for that. You know, matter of fact, I was looking at our pipeline today and just, it's amazing. It's like, it's just as soon as it hit Q4, they just started, the pipeline started building. It's just ridiculous.
Wow. That's interesting. And are you guys buying only on the single family distressed debt side? Or are you guys also looking at commercial assets?
The fund itself can buy anything backed by real estate. We made a pretty broad fund with a narrow altruistic focus, but we are able to buy on the commercial side. Right now, we're focusing strictly on the single family. I do see commercial stuff funneling through, you know, paper stack though.
That's intriguing. That's absolutely intriguing. So scaling up that side of that business, again, going back to the high touch side of it. I mean, that requires a lot of employees, that requires a lot of phone time, that requires a lot of research, even locating. I mean, I'm sure you guys get some bad tapes with, you know, phone numbers that don't work or, you know,
of course,
mail that comes back returned or, I mean.
Yeah, that's kind of the nature of the beast. You know, systems are the key, right? Just systems are the key. And, you know, we didn't want to become bloated with huge payrolls because then it starts, you know, driving down returns for the investors. So we heavily rely on outsourcing, whether it's through our loan servicers. You know, we drive the strategy. We lay out the detailed information of what we want to do, but we have, you know, lots of systems in place to help scale, right? Just a lot of levers instead of, you know, you can do horsepower or you can use, you know, some levers. We like to use levers.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's interesting. Yeah. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see kind of how, like you said, Q4 shakes out in this space. And then, you know, 2022, I don't know what your feelings on that are, but I'm guessing it's just kind of a crapshoot as to where it goes from here.
A little bit, but I do think, you know, there's more moratoriums expiring on foreclosure. There's moratoriums expiring on evictions. And when that stuff happens, it's not going to be nearly as bad as 2008.
Right. Should hope not.
It's just not going to be there, but you're going to start to see some inventory coming through the pipeline.
Right. Right. And how do you guys find that inventory? I mean, I would assume, like you said, this is still a good old boys network. So how do you go out and locate sellers?
Of course, a lot of repeat business. I mean, I guess now we've been in it for nearly a decade. So we've got the Rolodex is pretty priceless, but we're pretty fortunate to have PaperStack because, you know, we're kind of all over. We're, you know, our social media is pretty strong. LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, we've got our own podcast. And people are finding us now on the PaperStack side saying, hey, can you help me? I've got, you know, somebody brought us 5 assets in New York that were anywhere from 800 to 5 million in value. So those deals are out there. People find you. Going to the events is, I'm really excited to be going back face-to-face for events. Where are you in? You're in Texas?
No, sir. Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee. Okay. We're going to Texas in November for our first like live in-person event. And it's just, I expect it to be pretty epic.
Right. Man, people miss that. They absolutely miss that. Yeah, that's intriguing. What are some gotchas in the distressed debt buying business?
The gotchas, there's like 3 that if you're getting into the business, it's taxes, title, and blight. So you want to make sure property taxes can just erase your profits. I don't recall Tennessee being as bad, but like somewhere a little bit north, Midwest, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, those property taxes up there are just, they're insane. Right. And so if you let some past due property taxes, you know, you may find a couple years worth that you missed that can, you know, they can be $7,000-$8,000 a year. You start tacking on stuff. You're like, well, I got an $18,000 bill on something I paid 40 grand for. You're like, well, I just paid another 50% in taxes.
Right.
So that's bad. Title. If you don't have all your ducks in a row and you need to foreclose and you don't have title figured out, you can really lose. So you may be missing some transfers on like the mortgage or the note. Those are big ones. I've seen stuff lost to taxes. So, you know, tax deeds were sold. And in some states, you can get that back. In other states, it erases that first position lien. And then blight. So blight is basically if there's wood over all the windows and every house on the street has got wood in the windows, you know, you got to be wary about buying in there. Now, if you're the only house in the neighborhood that's got wood on the windows before you buy the debt, and there's some really nice houses around you, that's a huge opportunity. But if the whole neighborhood is kind of beat up, that's a real opportunity to fail.
How do you guys take care of, what do you say, taxes, title, and blight, those three items at scale?
At scale, it's all, again, outsourced. You order title reports, ownership and encumbrance reports, tax reports, and you order drive-by BPOs from licensed real estate agents who will go out, give you an assessment on value, take pictures of that house, take pictures of the house and other houses in the neighborhood. So it costs you money. You got to spend money to make money. And it's just, that's kind of part of the business.
What on average, and I know there's, it probably varies by location, but what's it cost per property in your due diligence phase?
Usually somewhere between 300 to 500, depending on what you're doing.
That's not bad.
So no, it's not bad, you know, and typically the way it'll work is you put, whenever you get a tape of assets, you put in an indicative bid, which basically means, hey, here's my bid pending. There's no past due taxes. The value that you're telling me it's worth that. There's no issues with title. And then if you get in there and you legitimately find something like, hey, man, this house is, here's the value I'm coming up with, or hey, you got 20 grand in past due taxes, I got to fade my bid, then you can back into it. So, but sometimes you say, sorry, I'm handcuffed, I can't do anything with it. And you're like, well, you're out $500, but it is what it is. You know, it gets for that 500, that's kind of an all-inclusive if you go the top route where you're having somebody read through servicing notes, which are every time somebody does something on the loan. So if the loan servicer talks to the borrower, they send the borrower something, they write down servicing notes. And it saved us a few times where the house looked good on the outside, but the servicing notes said extensive damage from Hurricane Michael. So it's one of those things where that having somebody else do that and read through all those notes and provide you with a report flying by instruments saves you.
Yeah, I would absolutely imagine. That's fantastic. I've learned a ton about your industry, kind of how you guys have grown PaperStack, what you're doing with the fund. A couple last questions on the fund side of things. A Reg A fund is not a cheap undertaking to launch. So what is the size of the fund? How soon do you think you'll deplete the, or maybe it's an evergreen fund. Maybe you could talk about that. I don't know. So what's the size of the fund, if there is a size, and then how long before, you know, you've completely spent the funds inside of it?
So we're allowed to raise capital through next June and then start winding it down. And then we have 5 years to sort of disperse of all the assets. We're on a hold pattern right now just because we're going through our annual audit, but it's been, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the supply chain line and building supplies. COVID kind of just, it made it to where, you know, my buddy's a contractor and he's like, look, what used to take me 3 months to get windows is now 11 right. months to get windows. So same thing on the services side. So audit, which should have taken like 60, 90 days, has been going on for like 5 or 6 months just because somebody in the office gets COVID, everyone's out, you know? So it's just been a giant drag. So once that's open, we can start re-raising funds. It is a giant undertaking. You know, we did the fund, Regulation A Plus fund, because you're allowed to market to anybody. I can do pay-per-click ads. They don't have to be accredited to invest in our fund. We take accredited and non-accredited investors. Probably wouldn't do that again. Now I would probably focus strictly on the, you know, a Reg D fund that would just focus on our current network of people that we know that would like to invest.
I'm curious, why do you say that? Because I know there's a lot of talk out there with, hey, you know, invested as little as $100. Why do you say that?
So from what I've found, some of the, you know, the larger, the more accredited investors, they're not necessarily calling you up every day wondering what's going on. You know, and it's just, you know, I'd rather spend the same money to talk to somebody who could invest, you know, 200 to 500,000, not to say that the $200 investment, I think that's our minimum, is $200. Wow. We did that because we like to make it available to the same people whose houses we're saving. Right. We're like, look, they should be allowed to invest. And we honestly haven't had very many $200 investments. Most of them have been higher, but it's just the amount of work that goes into sort of handling it.
Right. Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine. I was really curious how that shakes out when you do a Reg A fund with those low thresholds for entry. And you're answering the question, I think, that everybody who raises money says, is that the higher you go and the more money you can raise per chunk, the easier it gets. So,
of course, yeah, the easier it is. And, you know, you end up, we have a great fund management service that they handle everything. Like, we don't handle capital at all. I mean, I have access to the bank accounts. I look at it. I make requests. But they do everything as far as taking money in, putting it in the proper spots, sending out wires, I just get to do the approving of them.
Right.
So, yeah.
Man, that's fantastic. Rick, I've enjoyed this. Had a blast today learning about your different companies, how you guys have scaled, and why you only took 3 months to play golf and then went right back to work for the next decade. Maybe maybe you'll revisit that plan again someday.
That's the goal.
That's awesome, man. I've certainly enjoyed this. Here's the final four questions. If I gave you just 20 grand to invest in real estate, what would you do with it and why?
If you gave me 20 grand, I would go buy an owner financed, either an owner financed property or an owner financed note, just because there's tons of those out there that you can get really, really nice returns. I mean, you double digit returns on there, and they're passive. So I would do that. Or somebody just offered me a house the other day that they would say, look, 20 grand down, we'll owner finance it at 0% interest. So that was one where I was like, yeah, send me the information. I'll take a look at that.
Sure. Sure. That's amazing. That's awesome. Second question for you is this: if you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Due diligence, the devil's in the details. Make sure you run your proper due diligence on everything, whether it's valuations, whether it's potential rehab that's going to cost you. Try to understand all the costs that are going to come up along the way, because there's always going to be the, oh, I didn't think about that. And, you know, or, oh, I didn't know about missing the taxes. That could really nip you in the bud. So
it's
just due diligence. That's it, right? If you do your proper due diligence, the great thing about real estate is it's generally insured both for hazard and for title. So it's at the end of the day, you can always go long and rent it out.
I love that. I love that. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
We're saving people's homes, man. We're treating people like people. They're not social security numbers to our fund. We are about saving people's houses. We're about making a difference and telling them to pass it on to somebody they meet. So that's kind of our philosophy and our motto within our fund.
That's awesome. Very cool. Rick, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Reach out. You can reach out at hello@paperstack.com. It's PAPERSTAC.com. There's no K. Always reach out there and we'll be able to get back to you. And Google us online or Google us and you'll find us there. There's our phone number. So you can reach out and talk to, you'll probably talk to Brett if you call. So
gotcha. Gotcha. And your MWM fund is also accepting investments as well currently?
As soon as we're done with the audit, we will be. Because the way the audit works, we have to pause during the audit and then you can start taking funds back in.
Gotcha. All right. We'll stay on the lookout for that as well. Rick, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Sam, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. Have a good one.
You too.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.